Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
The results of the marriage survey, with its consequent change to the marriage law, have now opened up the question of religious freedom in Australia. Never too far from the surface, people disagree about how and whether Australia should have Acts of Parliament to guarantee religious freedom. There are different approaches under law to protecting religious freedoms. One thing is for certain, Australia is a signatory to international covenants that ought to guarantee religious freedom, including the right of parents to say what sort of teaching their children get about religious and moral issues. Whether it should be exemptions under existing laws such as the marriage law or the industrial relations laws, or whether it should be in an overarching Bill of Rights, is an open question that our Parliament will be looking at not just at the end of 2017, but well through 2018. One of Australia's leading thinkers and writers on this subject is Mark Snedden. He's the Executive Director of the Institute for Civil Society, and we spoke with him on Open House.
Australian voters have spoken decisively. They want same-sex marriage, but the polls taken before and during this the same-sex marriage survey have also indicated that Australians very strongly want to cover religious protections, freedom of speech and other protections. So we need to do both at the same time. As we legislate for same-sex marriage, which we should do, we need to put in place adequate protections for people who have traditional marriage beliefs. And when I say protections, I mean things that would protect them from being discriminated against. I'm not talking about licensing them to discriminate against same-sex attracted Australians.
Yes. Well, let's go right to the heart of that, because the people that I've had discussions with on this, the people from the yes side, their immediate response is we shouldn't replace one discrimination, as they would see it, with another. That is to say, we shouldn't just allow people to continue to discriminate against gay couples because the law has changed and now that relationship has been effectively legally validated.
Well, I agree with that. We shouldn't allow people to discriminate against gay couples any more than the existing law has some exceptions for religious institutions and so on. So I'm not proposing that we remove any protections for gay couples from discrimination. What I'm suggesting strongly is that before the campaign and during the campaign, we've seen discrimination going the other way. That is against people of traditional marriage beliefs. And I'm suggesting those people need protection. For example, that young woman in Canberra who posted "It's okay to vote no" on her Facebook page and was promptly sacked and called a homophobe and so on.
Yes.
She needs protection, doesn't she? And that's not, unless the advocates are saying the fact that you can write "it's okay to vote no" is in some way a discrimination against same-sex couples, which I don't think it is, the person who's been discriminated against in that instance is not a same-sex couple, it's a person with a traditional marriage belief. Likewise, there was a petition taken against Dr. Pansy Lai, who appeared on one of those No campaign ads, trying to have her deregistered as a doctor. Well, there's no discrimination against same-sex couples. There's discrimination against someone expressing a traditional marriage belief. And we have multiple examples from Australia and from overseas. The graduates from Trinity Western University in Canada who were denied the right to practice their profession as teachers because they'd signed a community covenant saying we believe that sex should be between a man and a woman in marriage.
Yes, yes.
They weren't discriminating against anyone. They were being discriminated against. So my point is we need to protect traditional marriage supporters from being discriminated against. We need a shield for them, not a license for them to discriminate against other same-sex attracted Australians.
Can you understand gay people? So I was last week debating this issue with Dr. Kieran Phelps, a prominent member of the Yes campaign, on an ABC program, The Drum. Her immediate response was, that would give people the license to put up signs in their window saying, we refuse to serve gay couples here. We refuse to sell a wedding dress to a gay couple, or, you know, gay couples need not apply, sort of thing. And I took it, Mark, that was actually based on a genuine level of fear.
Yeah, so we need to be really clear here, Stephen, that what I'm advocating for is not the right to refuse service to gay couples or same-sex attracted Australians. I am not advocating for any of those things that Kieran Phelps has said. I think there is one clause in the Paterson Bill, but it's about 5% of it, which would do that in respect of refusals to supply to a same-sex wedding ceremony. I'm not advocating for that.
You're not advocating for that. Because that would be a discrimination?
Because, well, it would currently be a discrimination against people on the grounds of their sexual orientation, which is unlawful in Australia.
Yeah, and I don't think a lot of people understand that. So let's just underline that just for a moment. Currently, you cannot discriminate against somebody on the basis of their sexuality, nor can you discriminate on the basis of their marital status. And if once same-sex marriage is legislated, you won't be able to discriminate on the basis of their marital status. Does that mean the wedding cake example is not a valid example? You would not protect wedding cake makers from the right to refuse to make a cake. Is that what you're saying?
I would not. No, so I would not advocate for that. What I'm talking about is the current imbalance in anti-discrimination law protections in Australia. So currently, a same-sex couple which say was refused a cake by a baker, mm-hmm. would have rights under anti-discrimination law, under the federal law, and under the law of every state and territory in the country to complain about discrimination. Turn it around and say someone who was of a traditional marriage view and was discriminated against by someone because of their traditional marriage view, for example, that the young woman in Canberra, they don't have rights under any federal law, if they've evolved. In fact, they have no rights under any law, under any anti-discrimination law, if they have acted out of a non-religious conviction that marriage should be between a man and a woman. So if they just have a cultural conviction, which would be the case of a number of the traditional communities that are in, you know, say, Western Sydney, they have no protection at all under any Australian anti-discrimination law. If they are acting, if they're expressing or acting on their traditional marriage belief on the basis of a religious conviction, they would have no protection under federal law, and they have no protection in New South Wales law, and they have no protection in South Australian law. They do have protection in the other states and territories from discrimination for acting on a religious belief. So when you stack up the level of protection on either side for same-sex people, same-sex attracted Australians, and Australians who have traditional marriage belief, you see there's this considerable, significant imbalance in the level of protection. Same-sex attracted people protected under discrimination law everywhere in the country, federally, state and territory. People who have a traditional marriage belief on the basis of non-religious conviction, no protection. People who have a traditional marriage belief on the basis of religious conviction are protected in 4 states and 2 territories, but not federally and not in South Australia and not in New South Wales. Mm-hmm. So you can't say it's a level playing field, and it's that hole, it's that imbalance that I think needs to be corrected now.
Our guest on Open House, Mark Sneddon. He's the Executive Director of the Institute for Civil Society. Mark, this is a debate that Australia would have had to have anyway. The same-sex marriage bill is hastening the debate. And now the question is, should the protections be included in the marriage bill, or should they be included in an overarching Bill of Human Rights or a Bill of Religious Freedom, call it what you will? And we've spoken with Frank Brennan for this program. He's advocating the latter. What's your view?
I'm a pragmatist, Stephen. I think what's the presenting problem at the moment? The presenting problem at the moment is, two. One is that same-sex couples want to get married. The country's voted for that. We fix that. The second presenting problem is that some people with traditional marriage views are being bullied and intimidated and discriminated against. I'll give you an example of a woman in Canberra. There was a university academic in Sydney who was a same-sex marriage advocate, put pressure on his employer to sack him, yeah, because he was involved in a board of an organisation in his own time, which was in favour of traditional marriage.
Yes.
That's just discrimination against traditional marriage people. In New Zealand and in the UK, advocates have used charities law to try to strip charitable status from organisations, from charities, which take a traditional view of marriage. They did that successfully in England from Catholic charities, which were in fostering and adoption services.
Yeah, so they were saying we won't adopt contrary to our religious beliefs, so we won't adopt to same-sex couples, and their charitable status was threatened.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I don't know if they had an absolute rule against adoption or whether they were just, that was well down the list. But anyway,
I see. But in case they had a traditional view, and the law, right, the law faculty in Canada, which is before the Supreme Court there, yeah, as we mentioned earlier, because not because of they've taken any action, just because they hold a view, in fact.
That's right. And so those graduates wouldn't be able to get a job in the 2 provinces in Canada. And that's being litigated all the way. And that's simply because they signed up to a community covenant saying, we believe that in traditional Christian belief of that university, that sex should be between a man and a woman in marriage. And then you've got your examples here of vilification law being overused. So, you know, the Catholic bishops published that booklet, Don't Mess With Marriage, which expressed the standard view of that marriages between a man and a woman, sex should be between man and a woman in marriage, and they were taken to the Tasmanian Anti-Discrimination Commission.
Which had a lower bar than other states in relation to...
Much lower bar. If I'm offended by any conduct on the basis of sexual orientation and a range of other characteristics, I can complain.
So this goes to the question of, do we need a Bill of Rights, overarching Bill of Rights, or should the protections be in the current bill? And that's, we know at the moment, the Parliament, certainly the Prime Minister, thinks that we should just, that we leave the current bill as it is, and any other protections, we worry about them next year.
Well, I understand that's still being debated within the coalition and among MPs in Canberra, so I don't think we've got an answer on that. My view is that we solve the problem now, because the specific problem, we will exacerbate this problem when we legislate same-sex marriage. So when we legislate same-sex marriage, we will put in place a public policy principle saying that same-sex Australians should get married. I have no problem with that principle. But what it then does is it opens up the argument to say, if you are a charity which has a different view, you're acting contrary to public policy and you should be stripped of your charitable status. Mm. So the very change to legislate same-sex marriage opens up the door for attacking charities. The very change to legislate same-sex marriage opens up the door to discrimination claims and vilification claims against people who are acting on or expressing their traditional beliefs. Mm. So as we are creating... This is incidental. I know we're mainly just trying to let same-sex couples marry. I got that. But we're incidentally creating a range of problems for people with traditional marriage beliefs. We need to put the protections in place so we don't create those problems, so that the different parts of the Australian community can live their lives without hurting each other in accordance with their deepest convictions. And we do it at the same time.
After I was on the drum during the week discussing this issue, somebody tweeted... Twitter's not a great place to have a public debate, by the way, but anyway, somebody tweeted, oh, instantly the Christians turn this around and now they're the victims. I suppose there's part of me that says, yes, if I felt that the whole society was against me because of my sexuality, now I want to get something back. Can you firstly understand that? But what would you say to that person?
I can understand the sense of, we've won this and we don't want to take anything back. But the key point I would make again is that I'm not advocating for anything that would increase anybody's rights to discriminate against same-sex Australians or same-sex couples. I am not proposing anything that licenses discrimination. Mm. What I'm suggesting is a shield. And as for recent, well, this has been known for years that this has been happening, because you look at the examples overseas. Trinity Western was 24, originally in the 2000s. Mm-hmm. The more recent one, more recently. We've had the Cooper's Brewery last year. We've had, you know, a range of examples of that sort of behaviour going on. And the Institute for Civil Society, which I'm the director, put these points in its submission to the Senate committee looking at the Brandis, the exposure draft of this bill in January of this year. So all of these things were put in detail to yes. that committee, on which Dean Smith, I should say, was sitting. So he is aware of that. And he came back and he asked the question of us, would this not be fixed if we put in, if we made federal law protect people on the grounds of their religious belief? So he knew the problem. He proposed a solution. We answered that question by saying it would be fixed in part, but not in whole, because you have a number of people in Australia who have a traditional marriage conviction not based on religious belief, and simply making religious belief a protected attribute for purpose of federal anti-discrimination law yes. will not help them. So uh-huh. he's aware of these issues, but in the bill he's put up, he has done nothing about them.
Well, that's a tremendous shame, because probably it would have been an easier road if he had. And what's your view, Mark Sneddon, about the leadership or otherwise provided by our major political parties on this issue? Because, you know, government has responsibility to help the society to do its thing in an ordered and democratic way.
You're absolutely right. And so far I'm pretty disappointed about the level of leadership, but as I said to you before, I don't think we've seen what's going to come out at the end of this. What we know is that 39% of Australians who were eligible voted no. 39% of Australians is 4.9 million Australians who voted no. They have rights just like same-sex attracted Australian couples have rights. And while I'm entirely happy to respect the mandate which has been given to legislate for same-sex marriage, we ought not to do it at the expense of hitting the 39% over the head.
It's not a payback. And we can do what you're saying.
It shouldn't be a payback. I understand we all have moments of anger, but a mature civil society does not run on payback.
Now, one final matter that I'd like to raise with you, because we could speak forever about this, and it's a really important debate. But our guest is Mark Snedden. He's the Executive Director of the Institute for Civil Society. Much has been spoken in the last few days, and will be next week as well, about the role of parents, what parents can teach their kids, and whether parents can act on their beliefs by withdrawing them from, for example, sex education classes or the Safe Schools program. What's your view on that?
Well, I would support that right of parents to be able to withdraw their children from classes, and indeed that is supported in international human rights law, Article 14 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, to which Australia is a party, says parents have the freedom to ensure the religious and moral education of their children in conformity with their own convictions. Mm. That means that if you send your children to a state school or indeed any other school, you should be entitled to say, I object to this particular teaching that you're giving my child because it is contrary to our religious and moral convictions, and I'd like my child withdrawn from the class to the extent that material is being taught in that class. There is a provision to that effect in New Zealand, in the New Zealand Education Act, and Senator Patterson in his bill has copied across that New Zealand provision into his bill. I think that's sensible. I mean, in some ways, it's a pity that we even need to legislate it. I think it should just be respected. But, for example, in Victoria, you do not have the right to remove your child from safe schools curriculum instruction.
Yes.
I think parents should have that right.
Yeah, and ironically, I mean, the advocates of public education need to be careful what they wish for. When I was working with the Christian school movement, so many times I would hear parents tell me that the reason they had changed to a Christian school was specifically because of the moral teachings, and expressly around the issue of sexuality. Now, the advocates for the same-sex lobby, the LGBTI community, they say that's horrifying because, you know, of course they'll just be in like-minded pockets of bigotry, the sort of language that's used. But how do you work your way through that?
Well, I agree. I think that we need you need to respect everybody's rights, and you, the main point here, I think, in this debate, is you should be free to live life in accordance with your convictions, and you should be free to live life in accordance with your convictions, and neither side or group should be able to force their convictions on the others. So a religious person should not be able to force their views on, you know, the same-sex couple in terms of refusal of supply, and those who advocate for a same-sex or gender fluidity view should not be able to force that on parents and children who take a different moral view. Well, we're just going to have to negotiate these differences without being able to use legal weapons to force or funding weapons or commercial weapons to force others to adhere to our view. So where this debate goes wrong is where we say, I'm really convinced of my view, and the problem is we take the next step and say, and you, Charlie, it's my way or the highway. Yes. You agree or get out. That's the problem.
Yes, it is. And it was for that reason that anti-discrimination law was invented, not as a panacea, but as a way of moderating civil society. And that's what you're on about. And I very much thank you for being part of this debate.
You're welcome, Stephen. And we can do both now. And we're not licensing discrimination. We're protecting traditional marriage supporters from discrimination.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.